Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama is Chaf Ches. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is only Zichron Shmas Libig Arvela Bashmuel. We begin today the Gemara on Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph, and we start with the new parak. We are beginning this morning the third parak of the Masechta. More discussions regarding Nezek, and specifically Nizkei Adam, and things that are, and Nezekim that are created by a person. We start with the Mishnah. So you take a jug and you leave in the Rishos HaRabim, and somebody else comes and trips on the jug that you left in the Rishos HaRabim. Vishavra, and the person, while tripping over, breaks your kli. So that person who trips over and breaks their kli, the kli that you left in the Rishos HaRabim, the jug that you left in the Rishos HaRabim, so the person who breaks is going to be potter. He's walking the Rishos HaRabim. He has every right to walk through the Rishos HaRabim. And in fact, not only is he going to be exempt from the jug, but then let's go on to the next point of the Mishnah. V'im huzak bad. Now let's say the person actually gets injured. Meaning not only is he trip on your jug and break your jug, and not only is he going to be exempt from having to pay for your jug, but furthermore, if the person who trips gets injured, so then the person, the owner of the jug, is going to be responsible for paying for the injury. Bala chavetz chayv b'mizko. The owner of the jug is going to be obligated to pay for the nezek. Okay, so Adkan Divrei Mishnah. The Mishnah is very straightforward. A very simple case where a person leaves a hazard in the Rishos HaRabim, leaves a hazard in the street, somebody comes over and trips over the hazard. So really two points that we just learned together in the Mishnah. Number one, he's exempt for having to break the hazard because hazard had no business being there in the Rishos HaRabim. Number two, if that person got injured, so the owner of the hazard has to pay for the injury. Those are the two points that we learned. Now, if you read the Mishnah and you read it quickly, which I did, so you realize that the Mishnah actually changes the word that's used to describe the word jug. The Mishnah starts off with the words Hamniach HaZakad. So you left a kad. And then the Mishnah transitions going from kad to Bal HaChavis Chayv Penizko. The owner of the barrel is Chayv. Now, they're both utensils, they're both items. But the Mishnah just went through a very smooth shift. Well, I don't know how smooth it was, but it shifted from calling it a kad to calling it a chavis. So pasuk b'chavis, sign b'chavis. So the Gemara just makes a very simple observation. Why would the Mishnah? It's one case. Why would the Mishnah transition from calling it a kad to then calling it a chavis? V'tananami. And the Gemara says, and this is not the first time the Mishnah did this. The Mishnah is going to be guilty of making this transition of kad and chavis a couple of times. Gemara quotes another Mishnah. Zeba bechavisa v'zeba bekaraso. A person's coming with a barrel and the other person's walking with a beam. V'nishpura kado sholzeh bekaraso sholzeh. And impact. And upon collision, so the one holding the barrel, his barrel broke as a result of the impact with the beam. So putter. So there's going to be an exemption. They're both walking in with permission, meaning that they both had the right to walk there, and therefore they're going to be putter. We'll discuss more of this particular scenario later on. But right now, the only thing that is relevant to our Gemara in terms of noting is once again with the same transition. It opened up with the word kad, and then other way around. It opened up with chavis, and then it transitioned to kad. So pasuk v'chavis v'siyim b'kad. So once again, that's another occasion where the Mishnah just kind of transitions from kad to chavis. And the third time, utzananam zeba b'chavis or shayam zeba b'kad or shal dvash. Let's say a person's walking with a barrel of wine, another person is coming with a jar of honey. Nistika chavish al dvash. V'shafach zeh yeinov v'hitzel as a dvash. And then what happens is that a crack in the honey barrel. So the person with the wine says, you know what? I'm going to be a hero today. So he takes his jug of wine, he takes his barrel of wine, and he pours out the wine, and he goes and he saves the honey. V'hitzel sadvash l'socho ein lo ela scharo. Now, what can he charge? Meaning, is he allowed at that point in time to charge for the loss of wine? Because he poured out all of his wine in order to save the other person's honey. So can he charge for that? The Mishnah says no. The only thing he can charge is just schar, is just the wages. And when we see this Mishnah later on, we'll discuss in more detail exactly what those wages are. But in the meantime, however, pasach b'kad b'siyim b'chavis. Again, a third time now, once in our Mishnah, and now two times in two other Mishnahs, where you see that it transitioned from being a kad to a chavis. So the Gemara is really dealing with a very simple question, and that is that Katan and Chavis are basically interchangeable, but why would the Mishnah interchange them within the same exact point? And not only once, but three times over, the Mishnah did that. Obviously, the Mishnah is trying to make a point, and the Gemara now is going to amplify the point of the Mishnah. So Amar Rav Papa, Hainu Katan, Hainu Chavis. So Rav Papa says that Katan and Chavis are interchangeable. Now, that seems to be obvious, but as we're going to now go through the Gemara, there is a point to be learned over here. Lamai nafkamin, the Gemara says, Mekachumemkar. The Gemara says, in terms of Mekachumemkar, so the Gemara says, this would be the nafkamina. So for example, an eBay becomes the best way to amplify these points. Right? Let's say you're selling something on eBay, and you advertise it as being a cod. And then cod is, parenthetically, chavis is like a larger barrel, cod is like a smaller barrel. Okay, more like a jug. But anyway, so you're selling something on eBay, and you describe it as being a cod, and then it gets to the buyer, and it turns out that it's a chavis. So the Gemara says, because they're effectively interchangeable, so therefore neither party can say, mekachtos. Well, what did you just do? So the Gemara says, that's why it is significant that these things are interchangeable, essentially. So the Gemara says, wait one second. In other words, a lot of this agreement/disagreement when it comes to buyer and seller is going to be based on social norms. Meaning, the Gemara itself says it very clearly. Let's say, in our society, Kad and Chavis are two separate types of containers, and nobody ever interchanges these terms. So the Gemara says, if that's the social norm, so then when I'm selling you a kad, and meanwhile it turns out to be a chavis, or vice versa, so then each party can say, mekachos, what are you doing? That's not what I wanted to buy. And in our society, nobody interchanges these terms. So the Gemara says, so if that's the case, so then Rav Papa cannot be right. So the Gemara says, well, we're living within a society, the Chiddush is the following. We are living within a society where most people refer to the kad as a kad and refer to the chavis as a chavis. However, it is acceptable to interchange these words, where sometimes people, even though they have a kad in their hand, they refer to it as a chavis. And even though they have a chavis in their hand, they refer to it as a kad. So in other words, most of the time, the chavis is referred to as a chavis, and a kad is referred to as a kad. But some of the time, they're interchangeable. Now, ma'u detima zil basar ruba. So the Gemara says, so now, here comes the chiddush. Chiddush is as follows. So I now put up my container on eBay, and I advertise it as being a chavis. Okay? Then a buyer looks at it, clicks on it, and it gets to his house. And it turns out that it's a kad. Now, wait one second. Most people in our society refer to the chavis as a chavis and the kad as a kad, and some people interchange that. But look, when he put it on the market, he advertised it as a chavis. I thought I was getting a chavis, and meanwhile, I got a kad. And generally speaking, when defining things, what normally sets the tone and the rule? So normally we have this principle called rov. And if the majority of time people refer to the chavis as a chavis, can't I, the buyer, now make the following argument? Look, he advertised that it was going to be a chavis. And most of the time people refer to a chavis as a chavis. And so therefore, isn't it fair for me to expect it to have been a chavis? And yes, I'm going to acknowledge that sometimes people interchange the word kad and chavis, but that sometimes, most of the time, a chavis is a chavis. So can't I let the principle of rov be the determining factor in me saying, I expected a chavis? Most of the time, it's called a chavis. And here the Gemara gives a huge chiddush, and that is in hochim b'mamon achar rov. And the Gemara says that when it comes to monetary law, we don't follow rov. And the Gemara ends the point right over there. So it only begs the question, why not? Meaning, rov is a very powerful concept. In fact, we generally say that in halacha, Rove is a determining factor. And so why, when it comes to monetary law, when I bought something, and most of the time, we all acknowledge, most of the time the chavis is referred to as a chavis, and you advertised me as selling a chavis, and I bought it thinking it was a chavis, and now it turns out to be this smaller container called a kad, and I can't make the argument, well, that doesn't follow Rove. Most of the time, a chavis is referred to a chavis. Why not? Meaning, what is this principle of Ein Hochin Mamon Achar Rov? So the Gemara ends the discussion over there. The Gemara doesn't give And any more to this, if you take a look at the top Tosos on Chavzayin Amid Beis, Tema Tosos writes Matam Enochin Enochin Leitzi Bekavachomer Medina Nefashos. Now Medina Bekamet the Sanhedrin. Rav Yoshi Maisalab Bekavachomer Medina Nefashos. Uma Medina Nefashos the Chamir Omer Rachman Azel Basaruba. Dina Mamans Lo Kosher Kain Veafilu Ruba Deleitzi Kaman Azlin Medina Nefashos Basaruba Kedama Breish Sarah Mora. So Tosos over here says, I don't understand, why should that be? When it comes to monetary law, we're not going to follow a majority. And Tosas over here really strengthens the question. Tosas says, you know, that when we're about to kill somebody, so we will establish certain criteria based on a rov. Meaning that we're ready to put capital crime into effect because of rov. So if rov principles are going to be affecting capital crime, we're talking about money. Money is not as serious. So why wouldn't rov be a determinant when it comes to mammon? That's Tosus' question. Tosus' answer. V'yishlamer da'hasam gabi dayanim shani dechashiv miyot didu kimisha ein of aleka. Lememer hasam uke mamon becheskas mare da'abeis den mafki minei ava gabi shar mamon di'ika miyot v'chazak alo azlin abasaruba. So the Gemara says like this. First of all, when it comes to a beis din, sorry, Tosus says like this. When it comes to a beis din, and beis din, let's say, has a vote, and majority say one way and the minority say another way. So Tosu says there, we don't view it as a majority and a minority. When Beis Din comes to a vote and there's a majority, we then say, Beis Din decided. Meaning we don't say, well, there's a minority and despite the minority, that's not the way we say it. The way we say it is, Beis Din decided. Meaning once there's a majority, so then Beis Din is issuing a ruling based on the majority, but it's basically, it's Beis Din's ruling. However, when it comes to money, look, I'm on the selling side of an item. I sold an item and I claimed it was a chavis. And most of the time a chavis is a reference to a larger container. And meanwhile, the buyer said, what did you just sell me? You sold me a cod and you advertised it was chavis. And my argument is as follows. Well, wait one second. Some people refer to it as a cod. And I'm doing that as well. And now, what do you want to do? You want to now renege on the deal. Hamotz mechaveir olav araya. Meaning, when it comes to mamonos, we have another very strong principle, and that is chazaka. We have this idea that a person, once he has money in his hands, once he has an item in his hands, so, and you want to extract it from him, you need absolute proof that it belongs to you. So even though we have majority, minority, well, majority of the time it's called the chavis, but sometimes it's called the kad, and so they're making these arguments, but even more overwhelming than the arguments is the idea of amotzei mechaveir olav araya. You're trying to extract money out of my hands, you got to bring not just good evidence, you got to bring absolute proof that this money in fact belongs to you. So Tosha says, so when it comes to mamonos, you have competing arguments. You have rov, but on the other hand, you have chazaka. Now, it is true, by the way, just one more point to make on this Tosos. It is true, the Gemara in Chulin says, ruba v'chazaka, ruba adif. That if I have a rov versus chazaka, rov is going to trump a chazaka. So over here, the rov is saying one thing, the chazaka is saying another thing. And what basically we're saying over here is the chazaka is going to beat the rov. But that's normally true. But chazaka over here is more powerful because we're talking about chazaka of ownership. Meaning, I have something in my hands. You're trying to take it away from me. That is in halacha, a very powerful force. And even with a rov, you're not going to be able to take something out of my hands. Let's continue. We're on the top of Chazayin Amud Beis. Uba'ach v'nitaka ba'vishavar patem. Okay. I left the jug in the Rishus HaRabim. Somebody trips on it and breaks my jug. So, he's going to be patra. Am I patra? Yibayle le'yunei mezo. So the Gemara has over here a very interesting question, and that is, and I'm sure you've heard this once in your life, or you maybe even have said it once in your life, why don't you look where you're walking? Okay, and nowadays in today's society with our cell phones, I'm sure this happens all the time. Why didn't you look where you're walking? Or God forbid, why don't you look when you're driving? But the Gemara's question is very simple. Why should you, in other words, there's a jug right there in the street, and you stepped on it and you broke it. So why can't the owner of the jug say to the person walking, well, you should have looked where you were walking?
Why is that jug considered a war?
Well, the Gemara, that's the next point of the mission. The next point of the mission is that if you get damaged, so he's going to have to pay for you.
But even if you've been damaged, you're treating considered health care, and you know, it's a bore, and you're like, you're breaking, so you're broken.
That doesn't automatically become health care. A bore is easy to talk about because a bore is just a pit. But let's say you leave a knife. That's tomorrow's daf. Tomorrow's daf, we're going to talk about whether a bore is necessarily hefker or not hefker. But for our purposes, let's assume it's not hefker. So the Gemara says, so why can't the owner of the jug say to the person who just broke it, you should have looked where you were walking? Now to this, the Gemara is going to give four answers. Now the fourth answer is going to be fundamentally different than the first three. So first, let's see the first three answers. So Amre Debe Rav Mishmei De Rav B'Memale Rishus Rabim Kulo Chavios. Answer number one, this is attributed to Rav, and that is the entire pathway is filled with jugs. Meaning that the guy who left the jug in the street left the jug, let's say it was one very big jug that filled the entire street, or let's say he left multiple jugs in the street so that there was no passage. Now, under those circumstances, Rav says, I'm allowed to walk through. So Rishus HaRabim, I have every right to walk through Rishus HaRabim. And if it means I'm going to have to break a jug, I'll break a jug. But in other words, I saw the jugs there. I noticed it. But he left no way for me to pass. Therefore, I'm allowed to break the jugs. Shmuel Amar Ba'afelu Shanu. Shmuel gives a second answer. And that is, this occurred in the dark. Meaning it was nighttime. No streetlights back in the good old days. And so therefore, I did walk on the jug. I did break the jug. When I look where I was going, the answer is very simple. I didn't see it. And therefore, I'm going to be exempt. Now, I mentioned yesterday that there is a basic machlokas amongst the Rishonim. We know that by a nezik adamur la'olam, a person is always going to be liable for his actions. Ben b'mezid, ben b'shogi. Whether it was deliberate or whether it was inadvertent, a person is always going to be liable. And I mentioned yesterday, the machlokas between Tosus and the Ramban, whether or not this is also going to be true by ones. This Gemara right here, I told you, as we go through this perek, there are going to be hints and clues throughout this perek of whether or not a person is going to be putter in the case of ones. This particular Gemara right over here, regarding Shmuel, and his answer to, why didn't you look where you were going? And the answer is because it was a night, and I couldn't see. So this gives the indication that Ones, in a case of Nezek, is Pater. The person is going to be Pater because he literally didn't see it, and what do you expect him to do? Okay, obviously the Ramban will have to deal with this case. Next. Third answer of the Gemara, Rav Yochanan Amar Bekeren Zavis. Rav Yochanan says it was a turn. Meaning, why didn't I look where I was going? Because the jug was right after that right-hand turn, and my view was obstructed, and I didn't see it. It's very similar to Shmuel's answer, in that there was no expectation for me to see it, because it was right after I turned.
Question?
Yes.
Why are you asking these questions? The owner is in the wrong to put something in the Rishus HaRabim.
So correct, but
yesterday, if you do something wrong,
Call a Mishana. Now that is true regarding monetary damage, where my money is doing damage. Let's say, for example, my shore is doing damage. But this is Adam. Meaning, so in the category of Adam, there is an expectation that human beings should be more careful. Even when the other person did something that was not appropriate. But I still, in other words, I'm walking, I can look where I'm walking. That's essentially the Gemara's question. Okay, Amra Papa. So now the Gemara just gave us three answers. Rav, Shmuel, Rav Yochanan. To review, Rav's answer, the question, why don't you look where you're walking? Why can't the owner of the jug say to the person who just broke it, why don't you look where you're walking? So the three answers are, Rav's answer, the entire pathway was filled with jugs. Shmuel's answer, it was nighttime. He couldn't see. And Rav Yochanan's answer is, it was right after a turn. And basically, it leaped up at him, but in other words, he didn't have a chance to react. So the Gemara says, if you read the Mishnah, carefully, sounds like Shmuel's pshat is right. Sounds like Rav Yochanan's pshat is right. It's hard to defend Rav's pshat. Why? Deikarav ma'iri nitakal afilo shavanami. Because consider, you have a guy who not only left one jug but multiple jugs in the street, totally obstructing the street. So now, if that's true, why does the Mishnah give a very passive example of, oh, and he slipped on it and he broke it? In other words, if somebody left jugs in the street with no allowance for passage, so why don't you, the person walking there, you have every right not only to accidentally step on a jug and break it, you can bemaze it. You can intentionally break the jugs. That person who left the jugs will have words for that person, but without using the words, without name calling, that person is totally in the wrong. And therefore, you have every right not only to, by circumstance, break the jug, you can actually go ahead and kick the jugs and break him. So the Mishnah, according to Rav, should use a much stronger language. Vishavar esakelim. You can actually break the jugs. Why does the Mishnah say that? So the Gemara says, you know, I'm going to defend Rav, says the Gemara, and I'm going to tell you that, yeah, according to Rav, it's not just nitakel, that you just tripped over the jugs. You can break the jugs. Wait, just give me a second. V'hai diktani nitakel, and the Gemara says, and why does the Mishnah use the word, the lighter language of, oh, and you just happened to trip on the jugs? Because consider the next point of the Mishnah. Because the next point of the Mishnah is, after you trip on the jug, and you break it, so you're going to be exempt. And the second point of the Mishnah is, and if you get injured, well, the owner of the jug is going to have to pay you for those damages. So now, consider. Let's say you deliberately break the jugs, and in doing so, you get injured. So the Gemara to that says, you see, here, it's only going to be true if you trip on the jugs, but not if you deliberately break the jugs. So, Chai ben Iska, Didafkan et Tekel, here to get to the second point of the Mishnah, he, the jug owner, is only going to have to pay you the damages only if by accident you trip on the jugs. Aval Shavar lo. But not if you break the jugs. My time of Hudazik and Afshe. Because by you breaking the jugs, so you caused injury to yourself. You can't point, even though, this is interesting, even though, you, according to Rav, you had every right to break the jugs, and the guy laid it out in the middle of the street. But if you deliberately intent on breaking the jug, even though you have permission to do so, any subsequent injury that happens to you, you can't blame the jug owner. That was an injury that was caused basically by you. So because in the second case of the Mishnah, we need specifically the word nitakel, ketani resha nitakel. So that's why the same word was used in the beginning of the Mishnah. But according to Rav, hu adin, the same thing would be true, that you can actually break the jugs. Yeah, Ben?
I was wondering, in terms of the
We'll talk about stacking the jugs, and I'll point out a Tosos who asked the question basically of why not just stack the jugs instead of having to break them. Amalei Rabbi Abba LeRavashi Hachi Amrei Ben Ma'arav V'Mishmei DeRabbi Ula. Okay, now I told you that there are four answers to this question. So far, we've seen three. Three answers to the question, which basically all revolve around the fact that either according to Rav, the owner of the jug did something terribly, terribly wrong in that he blocked passage in the Rishus Rabbim altogether, or according to Shmuel, according to Rav Yochanan, it was night or it was right after a turn, where basically you didn't see the jug, and that's why he smashed into it. And that answers the question of why didn't you look where you were walking? In Eretz Yisrael, they also asked the very same question, but in Eretz Yisrael, they gave a really different answer. And as I mentioned, the fourth answer is much different than the first three answers. The fourth answer goes, they say in the name of Rabbi Ula, this is the answer they give in Eretz Yisrael, Lefi Shein Darkan Shal Bnei Adam Leizbonem B'Durachim. Once you're walking on the road, you don't look where you're walking. Meaning there is no expectation that you're going to be watching every single step that you take, and therefore you're not going to be responsible for every single step that you take. And if it's, as long as you're walking the Rishus HaRabim, where the public are allowed to have all access, so therefore every step you take is not going to result in any liability if you walk on something that was left in the Rishus HaRabim. So this is the answer that's given in Eretz Yisrael, and obviously this really is a fundamentally different answer. Meaning the question is, why don't you look where you're walking? And in Eretz Yisrael, the answer is, because there's no expectation to do so. Whereas according to both Rav and Shmuel and Rav Yochanan, although Rav Yochanan did live in Eretz Yisrael, but according to the first three answers, no. There generally is an expectation that you're supposed to look where you're walking, and it's just different circumstances in terms of why in this case you're going to be exempt from having broken the barrel. Gemara tells the story. Have Uvda ben Arda, Chayev. I'm sorry. V'Chayev Shmuel. There was an incident in Narada, and Shmuel found the person liable. Meaning, the guy stepped on a jug in the Rishos HaRabim, and it was during the day, and the guy didn't look where he was walking, and the jug owner took the guy to court, and Shmuel said, yeah, you should have looked where you're walking. Now, this is consistent with Shmuel, because Shmuel said, the only time there's going to be exemption is if you broke in the middle of the night. But if you were in the middle of the day, the expectation is you need to look where you're walking. Now, the same circumstance happened in Rava. Somebody broke a jug in the middle of the street, and the jug owner took the guy to court, and Rava said, you got to pay the jug owner. Now, as far as Shmuel's concerned, good. With Shmuel, we found consistency, because we know that Shmuel's of the opinion that unless it's night, the guy's expected to look where he was walking. Ela Rava Lema Kishmol Svir Le. Now, but do you want to say now that Rava holds like Shmuel? So the Gemara says, Amara Papa Karna Da'atzar Rahava Dechevin Debrishus Kavdei Ibai Le Uyune Umeza. So Rav Papa says like this. Maybe not. Maybe Rava doesn't agree with Shmuel. Now, I don't know why the Gemara is predisposed to avoid this conclusion that Rava doesn't hold like Shmuel. But the Gemara is suggesting maybe Rava doesn't hold like Shmuel. And maybe the reason why the Rava held the breaker of the jug liable, even though the jug was in the Rishus HaRabim, is because what the Gemara describes as Karna De'atzara. And Rashi explains like this. By the olive press, so people would go to the olive press and they would fill the jugs from the olive press. And the olive press was right up against a Rishus HaRabim. And basically, it's like a very popular store where there's going to be parking and there's going to be double parking, right? Anyone who has any Manhattan experience, so you know that parking is very difficult and double parking is basically the answer. Now, it's an illegal answer, but in other words, I'm not justifying it, but I'm just explaining, meaning it's understood that when there's going to be something, an area that is very, very popular and very populated, so people are going to double park. So basically what the Gemara is saying over here is, Karna Da'atzara, by the olive press, when people are all waiting their turn to get olive oil from the olive press, so there is an expectation that people are going to be parking and double parking, and maybe even triple parking, right by the olive press. Now when I say parking, I'm meaning putting their jugs down in the street. And it's sanctioned, meaning this is not illegal, it's perfectly sanctioned. So that's why in this limited circumstance, Rava said, you were walking by the olive press while people were waiting in line and people were putting their barrel in the street, waiting their turn to get to the olive press. They had the right to park over there. And in that circumstance, Rava says to the person who damaged the jug, you have to pay. But only in that circumstance.
That jug is also within the valid hours of the person, which you mean it's right? It's just for sure, right?
Well, I mean, I gave the example where people are waiting there also. Maybe people, in other words, they just put their jug down. And then, while waiting their turn. The point is that they had every right to put their jug there, and that's why the person who broke the jug is going to be liable. But what the Gemara is saying, however, is that, generally speaking, Rava would not hold the breaker liable if he broke a jug in the middle of the street. And only in these very limited circumstances where parking was permitted. Since parking over here was legitimized, so therefore the walker, the person walking through the street, had the responsibility of looking where he was going. Shach le'Rav Chisla Rav Nachman, the Gemara now is going to turn a corner in terms of a discussion. Next discussion that's coming up, the rest of yesterday's daf and a good part of today's daf, half of today's daf, is all going to start with this Gemara right here, where the Gemara over here is going to give an assessment of damages, almost like a menu of damages, a schedule of how much you have to pay if the following damage occurred. Now, what are we giving over here? So according to Rashi, we're giving a schedule of damages in terms of how much you're going to be paying for busha, for the embarrassment. Yesterday, we introduced ourselves to the idea that when a person damages another person, so there you have to pay nezik, you have to pay the depreciated value, and the other payments you have to pay, including embarrassment. So somebody asked me the question yesterday, well, how do you assess that? And it's very difficult, meaning there's no easy answer to that question. How to assess embarrassment? So over here in the Gemara, at least you'll see, it was like they had a schedule. They had some sort of menu where basically, if you do this to somebody, it's this much money. If you do this, that's this much money. Although we'll see later in the 8th Perek, there could be other variables involved. meaning embarrassing somebody who is more prestigious, embarrassing somebody who is less prestigious. Maybe it's also going to be a function of who did the embarrassing. There could be other variables involved. But over here, to put it simply, according to Rashi, the Gemara over here is just providing a small schedule of, here's how the payment for embarrassment is going to go.
What is their source?
So Rashi says, that's a great question, I don't have a great answer, but Rashi says, minhag ha-dayanim, meaning this was just simply the custom. So the judges got together, in other words, they had a conference. I'm embellishing a little bit, but you understand. They had their dying conference, and at the conference they said, this is what we do, and basically, the custom came about. So Shalach Rav Chisla Rav Nachman, Hare Amru. So they said, meaning, I guess at the conference. So they said, L'rechuva shalosh. So if a person hit another person, and basically he hit him, but with an arkuva, basically with a knee. Okay, so that's an injury, but with a knee, it's like, okay, it's not terribly embarrassing. So for that, three salaim for the boshes. Now lebiita. Now, but if he kicks him, meaning if he kicks him with his lower foot, so that's more embarrassing. And chamesh. So therefore, the embarrassment is going to be assessed at 5 salaim. And lesunakares. Forgive my pronunciation. I'm sure I mispronounced it. So you hit somebody with the handle of a donkey. So in other words, you took like a donkey leash and you smack somebody with a donkey leash. So shalosh esrei. So that's going to be a schedule of on the schedule that's going to be 13 salaim. Okay, so that's even more embarrassing, and so therefore, aside from all the other payments that you have to pay, the nezek, the ripui, sorry, the shevis, we're just focusing on how much the boshes is going to be, and then to continue lepadna demara ulekupina demara mai. So they said to Rav Nachman, okay, so we give you basically our schedule of how much we are going to assess in terms of these payments of embarrassment. What if you hit somebody with the back of the shovel? So what do you think should be a fair amount to charge in terms of boshes? Yeah, so shalach lei chista chista kanasika magbis bebavel. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Chista in response, what are you talking about right now? Meaning you're assessing boshes damages? Do you not realize that we all live in Bavel? And in terms of compensation, meaning basic remuneration, so that is something that we'll collect in Bavel. But over and above, what the Gemara here refers to as kanas. Now, boshes may not necessarily be the classic example of kanas, but the idea is it's over and above that which you actually damaged, and so therefore it's kanas-like, and in Bavel we don't do that. You need a beis din, you need smuchim. You need a certified court in order to make such assessments and such collections. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Chista, like, what are you doing making this schedule here in Bavel? We don't do these types of collections here in Bavel. So Emily Gufa de Uvda Hechiave. And Rav Nachman says, and look, as long as I'm entertaining this discussion, could you just tell me, like, what's basically the Gemara is asking Alan's, Rav Nachman's asking Alan's question. Like, what's happening over there that you guys are hitting each other with the back of a shovel? Like, could you tell me, like, how all this began so, like, I can understand a little bit better of what's going on? So, Shalach Le Dahu, Garguso de Beitrei. So the Gemara says, yeah, I'll give you the story. So this is now Rav Chista filling in Rav Nachman and all the details. There was a water pit that was owned by two people, the Chol Yuma HaVedal Echad Minayu. So, and basically the agreement that they made between the two of them is that they were going to alternate days. One person was going to fill from the water pit one day, and the other one was going to fill from the other day. And it was a simple partnership. Chad Minayu Asa Chad Kadali Biyuma Delo Delay. And then what happens is the impetus of the fight, very straightforward. A guy came when it was his off day, and he's starting to fill from the water pit on his off day. So Amar Le Yuma Didihu. So the other guy, the other partner says, what in God's earth are you doing? This is my day. I'm supposed to fill from today, and this is not your day. So Lo Ashkach Be. Now the other person wouldn't really pay much mind, and was filling from the water anyway. Shakapana Dabar Machye. And so the guy who was rightfully his day, so he took the back of the shovel and he started hitting the other guy. and that's how he and that was conflict resolution. Okay, conflict resolution 101. It's my day. You're not listening to me. Okay, very good. Here's the back of the shovel. Okay, Alan, this is like the perfect day for you. Okay, so Amarle meyapande bepanda lemechye. So Rav Nachman gives a Rav Nachman answer. Now, if you've been in the daf long enough, you'll know this is Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, really, that's the case, and you're wondering now how much to charge the guy who hit. And in terms of embarrassment, Rav Nachman says, if you would have asked me, I would have told the guy, you know what, keep hitting him. Hit him 100 times, that's fine. Meaning, he's right. It was his day to collect from the water. They had an agreement. The other guy came on an off day for the other guy, and they warned him, this is my day, this is my day to collect from the water pit. This is not your day. The other guy didn't listen. So you know what? Rav Nachman says, good for him. Hit him. And hit him 100 times, and that's fine. But Rav Nachman says, I don't even understand, Rav Chista, what you're doing asking me the question of how much embarrassment should we charge? Embarrassment? Keep hitting him. So I feel him on Dom right now. This brings us to one of the more interesting topics covered over here in the third parak of Baba Kama, and that is the following. Are you allowed to take the law into your own hands? So Rav Nachman essentially is saying, yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, the Gemara over here frames the discussion. So, now, as we're going to see in just a moment, this is subject to a debate whether or not you're allowed to take the law into your own hands. However, the Gemara says, however, if you are losing money in real time, meaning right now, it is a case which is black and white, it's cut and dry. And a person is taking money from you illicitly, illegally. And you are losing money in real time. So the Gemara is saying, so then you're allowed to take the law into your own hands. You don't have to suffer a loss to wait to go to court. The Itmar, the Gemara here presents a machlokas. Rav Yehuda Amar lo avid ninish dina nafshei. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that a person is not allowed to take the law into his own hands. Rav Nachman Amar avid ninish dina nafshei. And Rav Nachman says that you are allowed to take the law into your own hand. And hecha de ikap seda kule amalo pliga david ninish dina nafshei. And here the Gemara repeats. But it's after the Gemara introduced us to the machlokas. And then the Gemara repeats that in a scenario in which there is loss in real time, everybody agrees. Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda both agree. You're allowed to take the law into your own hands. That is only, the only debate is when there is no loss in real time. Meaning, it can wait. Rav Yehuda says, look, there's no loss in real time. It can wait. Meaning, I'm owed money, but right now, between now and the time we go to court, there's not going to be a real loss, so therefore let's go to court. And Rav Nachman Amar Avid Inish Dina Nashe, the Kevin de Bedina Aved Latarach. And Rav Nachman's of the opinion that, look, if you're in the right, if this is cut and dry and this is black and white, why do we have to be Tarech? Why do we have to bother the courts over something where I'm right? So Mesa Rav Kahana, so now for the rest of Chav Ches Amad Aleph, the first half of today's daf, the Gemara is going to now cite Mishnah Braisa, and a number of statements amongst the Amoraim to see who is right. In our case, but however, before we go on in the Gemara, let's go back to our case now of the water hole and the two people. So that's a scenario in which, as the Gemara just concluded, everybody would agree the guy was right in what he did. Meaning, because since they agreed, I'm going to collect from the water pit one day, you're going to collect from the other day, and now the other guy is coming on for what the other guy is an off day, so for the first guy who was his on day, for him, this is cut and dry, and it represents to him a real loss. The other guy's taken from the water pit on a day that he's not entitled to, so now I'm allowed to take the law into my own hand because it represents a real loss. And so what the Gemara now is going to do is see whether or not, when there's no real loss in real time, and he can wait till we go to court, should we wait to go to court, or can I take matters into my own hand? So again, machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman. Rav Yehuda says we should go to court. Rav Nachman says, even if it's no real loss in real time, I can take the law into my own hands. And here the Gemara begins the discussion. Meitzer Rav Kahana ben Bagbag Omer Al Tikanes L'Chatzer Chaver Chalitol Shalcha Shalom Berushos. Let's say my neighbor has something that belongs to me, and it's mine. Ben Bagbag is of the opinion that you still should not go into his property without invitation, without permission, Shema Tira Alav Kiganav. Because although what you're doing is right and legitimate and it's yours, but you also give the appearance of being a ganav and you do not want to give that appearance. So Allah Shavor Shinava Amarlo Shali Ani Noto. So the solution over here is very simple. You break his teeth and you say, okay, give me back that which is mine. Now, and the Haggadah also, right, we have this thing with Hakeyat Shinav, meaning, you know, you hit him right on the teeth. So, in other words, but you don't go on his property because you're going to look like a ganav. So, basically, go over to the guy and say, okay, enough already. It belongs to me, give it to me, let's go. So, now, what impression do you get from here? You get the impression that you can take the law into your own hand, meaning you can't go on his property, but, short of that, you can intimidate him, and you know, I'm being nice when I say intimidate him. I mean, the Braisa describes over here Shvor Shinav, you break his teeth. But why, if this is not, there's no real loss in real time right now, meaning maybe you can make the argument I need it right now, but the truth of the matter is, we're not talking about an actual loss. And meanwhile, the Braisa says, go ahead, take him by the collar and say, you're going to give it to me right now. So the Gemara says, Amarle, so he says back to him, Imcha ben Bagbag, I'm sorry, Imach, ben Bagbag Yechidahi. So the Gemara is, all right, Imach with a question mark, meaning, ben Bagbag Yechidahi, Upligi Rabbanan Aleha. So Gemara gives a couple of answers. Number one, this is the opinion of ben Bagbag. Fine. Gemara says, but that's his a singular opinion. And maybe the Chachamim don't agree with him. So that's point number one. Point number two, says the Gemara, Rabbi Yana Omer, my Shvor Shinav, Bidin. So, and another way to understand the Braisa is that break the teeth is not to be understood literally, but it's meant figuratively. Break his teeth meaning, do what you legally need to do in order to get back your item, which means take him to court. So the Gemara says that pshat in the Braisa is really difficult. So a couple of things. First of all, the Gemara says, why would the Braisa say, you say to him? If we're talking about taking him to court, so then the verbiage should be omrim lo. They're going to say, because we're talking about Beis Din. And shaliani notel, shalohu notel. And then when you say, I'm taking what's mine, well, if we're taking him to Beis Din, Beis Din's going to say, and you're going to give him back what's his. So this pshat in the Braisa is really difficult. Mi baile. Kasha, the Gemara acknowledges. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. So this Braisa seems to, the simple reading of the Braisa seems to indicate that a person can take the law into his own hand, get back something that rightfully belongs to him. Again, the Gemara deflects in one of two ways. One, this Braisa is only the opinion of Ben Bagbag, who's a Das Yachid. Two, is that the Braisa could be read, well, you're going to take him to court, although the Gemara admits that's a difficult reading of the Braisa. Tashma. Shur sha'ala agabi chaver lahar go. Uman balatachton v'shamed ishalom. Let's say your ox and somebody else's ox is having a fight right in the middle of the street. It doesn't have to be the middle of the street. But let's say your ox is having a fight with somebody else's ox. And the threatening ox right now is going to jump on top of your ox. So what do you do? I don't know how quickly you can move an ox. They're talking about a large animal. But basically what you do is you take your ox and you pull it under from underneath from the assaulting ox. I know. So Vishamat Eshalom. Vanafa Elyon. So now the assaulting ox is now landing on what he thinks is going to be the other ox, but no, because you slipped it right from underneath. And now he lands on the ground and the assaulting ox dies. So Pater. So this is super intuitive. The Braisa says it. You are going to be exempt for any damages. Because all you were doing was just simply defending your ox from another attacking ox. So my love the Muad like Upseda. Now consider over here. If let's say the assaulting ox is a Muad, so are we talking about a real loss? No. Because in the event that the assaulting ox does in fact damage your ox, so then you're gonna just take him to court and you're gonna get full remuneration, assuming the animal's a Muad. So the Gemara says, Bitam, the Ikapseda. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Because maybe the case in question over here is where the animal who is assaulting is not a Muad but rather a Tam. And remember, if it's a tom, you're not collecting full damages, you're only collecting half damages. So if you allow the assault to occur, you're going to be suffering a real loss, because you're not going to get full remuneration. So Yachim, let's say, for the Gemara says, well, if that's true, well, let's go on. Let's read on. Dachva la'elyon umeis chayev. Well, let's say, in trying to protect your animal, you physically push the animal that's on top. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, you're going to be chayev. The Gemara says, now let's consider. So the Gemara says, now if the animal is a tom, what you did was right. Meaning, even though you physically pushed off the top ox, but what you did was right. Because if the animal in question is a tom, you're gonna really lose, because you're only gonna get paid back half the damages. So why should you be obligated? Why should you be liable? But the Gemara gives an interesting answer. The Gemara says, because in breaking up the fight, if there was a way for you to break up the fight without having to be offensive, but simply to be defensive, the expectation is you should be defensive. Meaning, what you should have done is you should have taken the ox from underneath in order to break up the fight. And because you didn't do that, and because you attacked the other person's ox, that puts you in the wrong, and therefore you're going to be liable. And yes, by the way, a lot of interesting discussions from the Gemara that we just learned in terms of what happens when you get involved in a fight, trying to break up a fight. So should you? It's a difficult comparison, because we're talking about monetary damage, we're talking about property damage as opposed to bodily damage. So I'm not sure if the comparison is a great comparison, but certainly the idea that you should be more defensive than offensive when breaking up a fight. Tashma, the Gemara quotes another brisa. Hamamale chatzur chaver kadiyam v'kadishem ambal chatzur mishaber v'yotzei mishaber v'nechnas. Let's say your neighbor, who now for very good and understandable reasons, you're not going to like that much. So let's say you wake up in the morning and you find jugs that he laid out throughout your entire property. Okay. So you have every right to walk through your property and break whatever I'm embellishing now, but for a purpose, you can break whatever jugs you want. Mishaber v'yotzei, mishaber v'nechnas. Just break jugs. Meaning, that guy had no right to use your property as his storage, and so therefore you walk out of your house and you break jugs, and you walk in, you break jugs, and it's fine. Why? Because he's in the wrong. And avid inish din nafshei. A person can take the law into his own hands. Now, Ben, I promised you that we're going to discuss this. Mishaber v'yotzei. Look at the second tosis on the Amud. Chav chesam and aleph. Avag avdal ala mina shayel ala shamto. Hayin mishum deleket tircha b'shmita yoser midechifa. Avahacha lo atrichu l'sadran ze al ze. There is, the tosis writes, well, why, instead of just breaking the jugs, why can't you just simply stack the jugs one on top of another, and that way you can walk through your property and you don't have to break his jugs. So Tosus writes, and it's really the simple pshat in the Gemara, but Tosus spells it out. There's no expectation that if somebody was in the wrong, you then have to start stacking the jugs one on top of the other in order to walk through your property. If he's in the wrong, you can walk through your property like you normally do, and there's no expectation that you have to stack the jugs. Meanwhile, what are we learning together right now? Somebody was wrong. You are now allowed to break his jugs that's in your property. Sounds like you could take the law into your own hands. And furthermore, we're going to add, are we talking about a real loss? I mean, again, this guy, this part to me is a little bit gray, because...
Isn't this onus because you're not the way to walk?
Well, I mean, it's...
It's filled up your...
Okay.
You have to stack
it. Okay.
A loss of time.
It's a loss of time. To me, it's a little bit gray in terms of what is considered real loss. Meaning, right, loss of time, loss of the ability to walk in and out. Okay. So hamamal chatzur chaver katayin. So I'm sorry. Mishaber v'yotzei, mishaber v'nechnas. Am Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Mishaber v'yotzei lebeis, mishaber v'nechnas lahavi zichu yosav. Again, the Gemara deflects, and the Gemara's deflection over here is, well, maybe when we're talking about leaving your house and walking into your house, it means leaving your house to go to Beis Din, walking into your house to get paperwork in order to go to Beis Din. Meaning, you could read the brisa, again, it's not the simple pshat, but you could read the brisa that the only thing you're doing over here is basically going to court in order to take your neighbor to court. You could read the brisa that way. It's just a deflection of the proof. Tashma. Minayin lanirta shikalo yamav v'rabba mesariv bo latseis. Yovel's come, and it's time for your Eved Ivri to leave. And after 50 years, or short of 50 years, of having worked for you, and the Eved Ivri is now, he's an older man at this point in time, but he says, you know what, I really like you there, I'm not leaving. And the owner says to the Eved Ivri, yeah, but your time is up, and you gotta go. And we made the party for you last night, remember? and you're gonna go. So v'chavav asabo chabura, shehu pater. And the owner, in other words, this Eved Ivri is really being belligerent. So the owner basically pushes him to the point where it actually causes injury on the Eved Ivri. The owner is going to be exempt. He's in the right, even though he injured the other person. So Tamalama lo sikhol kofer l'shuv, lo sikhol kofer l'shav. If the guy is coming back to you when he shouldn't be coming back to you, you have every right to push him away. So hacha b'maiskinan be'avda ganava. So the Gemara says, I don't know if this is such a good proof, because we can argue that over here the ganav in question is actually stealing money from you. So this is a case of taking the law into your own hand when it represents a real loss. He's taking money from you. So the Gemara says, Ada ina lo ganav, ahasha ganav. Well, the Gemara says, well, that's weird. What are you telling me, that for 50 years he served you loyally and faithfully, and now he's starting to steal money? That's unusual. So the Gemara says, well, no, it's not. Gemara says, no, it's not so unusual. Because up until now, you were the owner and he was the servant. Indentured servant, it's an Eved Ivri, but you were the owner and he was the servant. So he understood that his role, and he understood that if he took anything, he's not going to have a good day with you. But now that his service is over and he just kind of wants to hang around the property, now he's not going to have that kind of awe and fear. And so if necessary, you push him away, and even if you need to physically push him away, you could do so, and you'll be exempt from any injury. Rav Nachman Yizagamar Be'evish Amasala Rabba Shivcha Kananis Adi Ina Itera V'Hashti Yisura. Or the Gemara says another reason why you're allowed to physically push him away, and even if you hurt him, you're going to be exempt. And that is because as long as there's an Eved Ivri, he could be married to one of your Shivcha Kananis. Once Yovel's come around, so now he's not allowed to be married to your Shivcha Kananis anymore. And so basically what you're doing is you're preventing him from Israel by pushing him off the property. Tashma. Let's look at our Mishnah again. Because our Mishnah says that somebody left a jug in the Rishus HaRabim. You walked and you stepped on the jug. So you're going to be exempt. So Taima didn't talk about Hashavra Chayev. But that's only if you tripped on the jug. Sounds like from the Mishnah you're not allowed to step on the jug. Somebody unlawfully put the jug in the Rishus HaRabim. I can't step on it. Sounds like I'm not allowed to take the law into my own hand. I'm Rav Zud, Mishmei Derava, Hu Adin, Afilo Shavra. And the Gemara says, and with the second time this morning we're making this point, no, it could very well be the halach in the Mishnah is you're allowed to break the jug. V'hai diktani nitakel. I did the kabai lemitzah sefer imuzak v'abayz chai benizko didafki nitakel. Ava shavalo duhu azek nafshei ketani reisha nitakel. Gemara makes the point, second time this morning we're making the point. It's because in the next part of the Mishnah, if while breaking the jug I injure myself, I can charge him for the injury. If I trip on the jug and hurt myself, so then I can charge for the injury. So because in the second half of the Mishnah, we need that the case to be specifically nitakel, that's why in the first case of the Mishnah, it's right to nitakel. But the truth of the matter is, someone left a jug in the street, you can break it. Tashma. V'katzosas kapa mamon. Remember, we discussed this case yesterday, we're discussing it again today. Two men are fighting. The wife of one of the men is trying to defend her husband. So she goes to the other person and she grabs him by the masculinity in order to try to stop the fight. The Torah says, katso sas kapa, you cut off her hand. And the Gemara immediately tells us, don't take that literally. It means a monetary assessment for the damage that she incurred and the embarrassment that was incurred. So my love, b'sheni yechol l'asi ha'idei davar acher. So the Gemara says, now, she basically took the law into her own hands. So why are we punishing her monetarily? Aren't we talking about a case where there was nothing else she could have done? The Gemara says, lo, she yechol l'asi ha'idei davar acher. So the Gemara says, no, there was another means of which she could have done. Now the Gemara doesn't give specifics in terms of what else she could have done, But let's assume for the purpose of this discussion, she could have done something else other than grab him by the masculinity. So the Gemara says, now if there's something else she could have done, so then this was unnecessary, and that's why she's going to be financially liable. So the Gemara says, okay, so now listen to what you're saying. So now basically what you're saying is that if there was nothing else she could have done, and she grabs the man by his masculinity in order to stop the fight, so you tell me she's going to be exempt. So the Gemara says, Ihachi, now, the conclusion may be right, but why don't we read on in the Braisa? Because it says, Adin, if let's say you have a Shlech Beizdin who does this action, so Patr, he's going to be exempt. So Liflog Belisne Bididei, Bamed, Ramam Beshecholatzi Ayidei Davar Acher, Aval Aini Cholatzi Ayidei Davar Acher, Petura. So the Gemara says, while not having to move on to another case, while staying on point, when the woman grabs a man who's fighting with her husband, and he grabs him by the masculinity, so why don't we say, if there was something else she could have done, then she shouldn't have grabbed him there, and she was going to be financially liable. And if there was nothing else she could have done, so then she had every right to grab him over there, and she's going to be exempt from any type of monetary payment. And the Gemara says, and why would the Braisa then move on to another point altogether, when you can make a distinction right there, and that's always better to make a distinction in the same case itself. Hachinami Kama, the Gemara says, well, that's correct. Meaning that's how we're going to read the Braisa. Bemet v'amam r'shecholahasi ha'ide d'vacher, v'ayin y'cholahasi ha'ide v'acher, nase yada kishliach based in the Petura. That's essentially how we're going to read the Braisa. If there was nothing else she could have done, so then she is by right allowed to grab the man in order to stop the fight, and she'll be like a shliach based in. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's consider the following. Harishahisa derech harabim maveres mitoch sadeo. Not la v'nasan lahem min atzad. A person has a property, and there's an established pathway for the public going through his property. So it's always an interesting topic of discussion. So what he wants to do is as follows. He basically, I don't want to take the public pathway away from the public, but basically what I want to do is I want to reroute. So I'm going to assume ownership of that pathway that's going right through the middle of my property, and I'm going to give the public something at the edge of my property. So, Masha Nasa Nasan Vishalo Lohigio. The halacha is fascinating. The halacha is that which he gave up in the middle of his property is not yielded. Meaning the public still has it. And that new path that he established for the public, that's going to be a new public path. So basically, he didn't get what he wanted. Now, Iyamart Abin Inishina Navshe, Nikol Parzavale Save. Now, the Gemara says, now, if you're allowed to take the law into your own hands, consider, I didn't take the public path away from the public. I gave them a new path. So why doesn't he just stand by that old path with a stick in his hand? And anyone who wants to go through the old path, so simply redirect them to the new path that he created. And if they're being a little bit reluctant, okay, so you got the stick. Okay, good. So Amar Zvid Mishmei Derava. So the Gemara says a couple of three answers. Number one, the Gemara says, well, what we're really concerned about is that the new path that you're going to create is going to be circuitous and not as direct as the old path. And so therefore, as Gzeira Durabanan, the rabbis did not want them to do that. Rav Mishasha Amar, but no say lam derech akaton. Rav Mishasha's answer is, he actually gave the public a circuitous path. And under those circumstances, Basin basically steps in and says, what you did is wrong. Because the public had a straight path, and now you are exchanging it for a circuitous path, that's not right. And Rav Ashi Amar, kol min atzad derech hakaltonu. Krov lazeh v'yirchik lazeh. And Rav Ashi says, look, by definition, whenever you're supplanting a new path with an old path, it's going to be inconvenient for somebody. And so therefore, by definition, you are going to be creating an inconvenience, and you don't have a right to do that. Well, the Gemara says, okay, so then just one more simple question. So if he didn't gain the old path, and the old path still belongs to the public, so why can't he just take back for himself the new path? Because basically he thought there was an exchange program. He thought, I'm going to get the old path and I'm going to give up a new path. And the conclusion is, he didn't get the old one, and the new one is now going to be yielded to the public. Well, why? Why can't he just take back the new path? So the Gemara says, "Vavli didi mishum de Rav Yehuda dam Rav Yehuda meitzar sheichziku barabim asa lakalkala." And the Gemara over here gives us a very basic rule, and that is, once a public path, always a public path. A public path cannot be, once it's given to the public, the person cannot take it back. Tashma. We'll finish up, obviously, with this. You're supposed to give a corner of your field to the poor, you do so. And the field and the poor go over to another corner of your property, one that you did not give up as payah, and they start taking food from that corner. So, zev is a payah. Both corners of the field are payah. Now, wait one second. I know I'm supposed to give to the poor. And I did, and I gave one of my corners to the field. How do they have the right to go to another corner and take? That's not theirs, that's mine. The Iamart of And again, the Gemara gives the very simple suggestion of take a stick in your hand, stand by the other corner, and just simply redirect the poor people to the correct corner that they're allowed to get from. And again, if they need a little bit of encouragement of, hey, don't go to this corner, go to the other corner. So again, just a quick reminder, you have a stick in your hand. So Amarava, my zev is zepeya, lipotron min hamaiser. So the Gemara says, no, of course you're right. If you set aside a corner of the field, and the ani is going to another corner of the field, of course you're allowed to redirect the aniim to the correct corner of the field. All the brisa meant when it says zev is zepeya, and it means that if the aniim are helping themselves to another corner of the field, which they're not allowed to, but at least you're going to get a tax exemption from the corner that they went to, even though that wasn't the right corner. Kidatanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa, Amafkas es karmo vihishkin baboker ubasor chay beper veolos v'shicha peya upatam namaiser. If you declare your vineyard ownerless for tax exemption purposes, and then the next morning you wake up and you, wow, I really went over time today. Sorry. So, and you take it all back for yourself. So you're still going to be obligated to pay all the matnos aniyim, for simplicity purposes, I'll call them taxes to the poor. The parah, the olos, the shichcha, the peah. I'm not going to go through each one right now, but basically, you obviously were trying to you're trying to create a shelter from tax. But it's obvious, and so therefore you're still going to have to give up to the aniyim all these various matanos aniyim. But patam and ma'aser, but you're going to be exempt from ma'aser. So if the poor go to another corner of your field and start taking from that field, so it's not theirs, and they're not entitled to it, and you can redirect them. But at least from the corner that they took from, you're going to be exempt from having to pay ma'aser on that corner. That's all the brisa means. But it's perfectly within your right to go and redirect them to the right corner. Conclusion of the Gemara. That was a lot that we just went through. Conclusion of the Gemara. If there's a real law, so avid inish and din nafshei, on a black and white issue, on a very cut and dry issue, so you could take the law into your own hand and execute what is the correct law. In a case where it does not represent a real loss, machlok is between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman, whether or not you're allowed to take the law into your own hand. Rav Yehuda says no, Rav Nachman says yes. And the Gemara went through a long series of Mishnayos and Braisos, each one articulating what seems to be a position on the matter, but the Gemara deflected in every one of these cases. So the Gemara leaves this question now as a machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman.